Okay, today's date is October 29th, 2019. Patricia Snook and me, Joyce Johnson, are sitting here with Ward Jones in his office. And today Ward is going to tell us a little bit about his education in Polk County.
I started the first grade in the Leggett school system under Miss Maud Lisenby. Miss Maud was an icon in the Leggett school. She taught there for her entire life and was a very dominant personality in the community and the school. She had one big room. She had several grades in that room. There was no heat other than a wood stove and no cooling whatever. I started in September 1935. Now, we lived on the family farm 2 miles east of Leggett on the present Farm to Market Road. At that time, it was just a dirt road, and there were no school buses in those days. So, unless it just happened that my dad would be home to where he could take me to school, I had to walk that 2 miles to school in the morning, regardless of the weather, and 2 miles home again after school, regardless of the weather. And the winter of 1935 was a very cold, wet winter. And by the time I had walked and gotten to school, I was wet. All my clothes were drenched. I would have to sit there in what was basically an unheated room during the day. By the time my clothes were nearly dried out, I'd have to walk home in the afternoon and get wet again. I stayed sick about half of the time. It showed up in my grades. Well, I get the general impression that I was failing most subjects. We were going into the spring of the year, and things for the climate was getting better by that time. Miss Maud ran a very strict course. She kept a peach tree switch over her front door of the schoolroom. If you misconducted yourself, you got a switch in with that peach tree switch, and she would lay it on you. The very first day of school, I got into a fist fight out by the road there. They had put a fence around the school property and built a sty over the fence. They had got it to the point where they had dug the post holes, and actually they were very big holes, big enough for a 6-year-old boy to get down into. I had gone down in there and was playing around at recess or something. One of my classmates, another 6-year-old boy, dropped a clod of that red clay that had been baking for 3 days or so on my head. And I swarmed out of that hole, and we got into the best fist fight that 2 little 6-year-old boys could. And the next thing we knew, Miss Maud had run about 100 yards from where the schoolhouse was down to the road. And she had me by an ear and the other boy by an ear, and she marched us up to the school and wore us out with that switch.
Is the school the same location as it is now?
Approximately. It was all wood frame, of course, at that time. And there were about 2 or 3 classrooms. And then there was a separate building for Mr. Thomas's science class. Mr. Ed Thomas taught science there in the Leggett School for practically all of his adult life too. And that's all I remember about the Leggett School. Our room, like I say, was one large room with several grades in it. Of course, no heat or cooling, whatever. I do not know the particulars about my grades, but I get the general impression that they were not good. When we moved to Leander, the local school was called Whitestone School. It was up and out on Highway 183, now on what was called the Jonestown Road. Jonestown was a fishing camp on just completed Lake Travis, completely unpaved, you understand. We were pretty well on our own getting to school back and forth. There was one important difference. We were only 20 miles from Austin. That was where the family did its weekly shopping. Every Saturday morning, Dad and Mom would load us all up and we would drive to Austin, where they would put my sister Mary Hazel, who was 2.5 years younger than me, out either in on the UT campus or on the Capitol grounds. And we would spend the morning there investigating every building and on the UT campus and every room in the state capitol and the old federal land bank, old bank building there on the corner of the Capitol grounds, which had been turned into a museum. It did not have somebody that stayed in there. You just went in and poked around and looked however you wanted to. And we got to where we knew every piece of Civil War soldiers' uniforms and swords and guns in the museum. And
Ward, your parents just dropped you off by yourselves?
We were dropped off entirely by ourselves just to investigate, and then we were picked up. I don't know what they did in the mornings. Whatever business Dad had, he had some association with the largest real estate company there in Austin. Then, of course, they had to buy groceries. Then we ate lunch, and right after lunch, they took Mary Hazel and I to the Austin Municipal Library and put us out. And this is really important in my life. We started reading there. Now, I was in the first grade. My sister had not even started school yet. But we were put in there with all of the access to a pretty good size library on our own. And we basically taught ourselves how to read. And then we started reading and living on a ranch there with 2 miles or so to the closest house with any family in it there. We were just basically on our own there in the ranch. I could check out 3 books at the library to take home for the week, and Mary Hazel could check out 3. And particularly in the summertime when we weren't in school, we would basically read those 6 books during the week. We not only knew how to read, we learned how to read rapidly and comprehensively, and we blew through the elementary school level in less than a year's time. And we were only out there 4 years, you see. But we were reading at an advanced level by the end of our second year. Before it was over, I was reading Nathaniel Hawthorne. Mm-hmm. It's full volumes. I remember him. And I was reading college-level books by the time I was in the third grade and fourth grade. A bunch of them. Now, I could read a 300-page book in one afternoon and evening.
Wow.
Easily enough. Without knowing what I was doing or what was going on, I developed a general education, at least past the high school level, somewhere in there. This went on for 4 years, you understand. But anyway, I went to about almost 4.5 years of Whitestone School. It only had 2 rooms. Ms. Mason taught the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd grades in one room with a total of about 20 kids in her room. And then Ms. Faubian taught the next 3 grades with a like number. The entire school had probably less than 50 kids attending it. And of that 50 kids, I hope appearing in any way superior or anything. Only maybe as many as 10 were from children in families somewhat equal to us in the socioeconomic class. The rest of them were charcoal cooker burners' children. When you made the charcoal, you cut the, you see, that was cedar brake country. And when they would clear, you had all of this cedar to cut, and they would make fence posts out of it. And then the scraps and stuff, they would pile up into a teepee-type structure of wood and cover it up with dirt, except right at the top. Then they'd pull enough loose at the bottom to set up a draft through it. And they would set it on fire, and they would cook that scrap cedar for most of a week, just smoldering there, and you would end up with a bunch of charcoal, which they would, the children would put together with their fingers and hands there into tow sacks, and their parents would take to Austin and sell to the retail stores. And the particularly, well, both occupations there, they were moving continuously from one place to another. The children were all maybe 3 years behind in their schooling, and they were mean, tough children too. The boys had Texas-sized jackknives, and if they got into any kind of disagreement with you right at recess, they'd come at you with one of those Texas-sized jackknives. And I learned very early in the game that you didn't leave the classroom without a baseball bat in your hand to defend yourself with. So I managed to survive. That was quite a difference in the age between a first grader starting there and your sixth grader, when in some way, and I still don't know how they managed to get kids that were graduating and go to Leander, which was 5 miles away, for the schooling after you graduated from Whitestone. But
so when did you move back to Polk County?
We moved back on January the 1st, 1940. We were there exactly 4 years.
And so you started to school here?
I entered the middle of the fourth grade in Livingston.
In Livingston.
Here, in the old, what later became known as the Alamo up there. We didn't call it that. It was just the school, the elementary school. About that same time, late 1930s, the Livingston School had grown to the point that they voted to borrow the money from the State Board of Education and build two brick school buildings on the west part of Church Street. And those had been completed. But we went for the rest of that fifth grade, and fourth and fifth grade was where I went to the Livingston School starting off. The sixth grade, we went over to one of the new buildings to a junior high. 3 years, and then there was 3 years of high school, because it was only an 11-year system. Before I got out, it was changed to a 12-year system, and we all got renumbered and everything. But I only went to school a total of 11 years before I graduated.
Do you remember any of your teachers?
Oh, some of them.
Just a couple of your favorites.
The later Ms. James Marvin Windham was one of my teachers there. She was a Miss Gibson at the time she taught me. And then there was a then Ms. Ferguson, who later married at least twice, maybe three times, and was known by various names in later years.
Did you have Ruth Pritchard?
No, I never had Miss Pritchard. I'm talking about when I was still over there in the Alamo. Miss Andrews.
Ooh, okay.
There was not only the long-time first grade teacher, but she was also the principal of the elementary school by the time I got there. She got me with her switch a time or two, too. The only bad grades I ever made in school was conduct. And they wrote me down whispers often. Was what I got really criticized on the report cards for. But I got a switching for various misdemeanor crimes a time or two before I managed to get out of school. And there was a Mr. Cox who taught art. He was went from Livingston after 1 year that I had him to Houston, where he went to work as an interior decorator for one of the department stores. I was trying to think of the lady that taught music, longtime music teacher. I was a natural boy soprano. As a matter of fact, a first winner, blue ribbon winner as a boy soprano. When we were still over at Austin, they signed another guy and I up as a duet to sing at one of the early inter-school competitions in Georgetown. And we were in first place as a duet there with me singing soprano. And my voice didn't change until I was about 12 years old or something like that. And I was a natural soprano. Talking about the contest in Georgetown, when they got me up to give me my blue ribbon, one of the judges looked at me and says, "Son, how old are you?" And I was in about second grade, something like that, and I told him. And he says, "I sure hate to tell you this, son, but you're underage. They never were supposed to have been signed you up for in the first place. I have to take back your blue ribbon, please." And they did give me a certificate. I've still got the certificate that I won. But I had to give back the ribbon. And they threw me out of the contest. I won the first prize, too, on storytelling. Of course, I was used to doing this kind of reading that I'm telling you about. And I had almost a phonetic memory from it. And they read us a story for, I don't know, 6 or 8 minutes. And then we had to tell this story back to the judges. Well, that was about 8 or 10 of us signed up in that contest. All the others, 2 or 3 minutes, pretty well ended what they could remember about the story. And that was pretty fragmentary. I started at the first page, and I told that story back almost word for word to the judges. And they were standing there with their mouths wide open. I won first prize there, and I had to give that back too.
Well, did you do anything like that when you came to Livingston? When you got back into Livingston schools, did they have contests like that?
No, I don't think they did. What we did have when I was in the fifth grade was the first statewide scholarship aptitude test there. That was a general test covered 4 or 5 different subjects. And the idea was to see, you understand, this was the very first one that they had in Texas. They wanted to pretty well see what they had to work with there. So they took all of our tests to Austin, and the state board scored them and decided where we stood academically there.
So was that in Leggett or in Leander that you did that?
That was after I moved back to Livingston.
Oh, okay. So it was...
I was here in the fifth grade.
Okay.
That was the very first state-level scholastic test that they ever gave in Texas.
That's interesting.
And things to complete the story, test was sent over to Austin, and we all went about our business for about 2 months or so. And Dad and Mom got a letter from the state board to them informing them that their child, Ward, had placed so high on the state scale that they ranked me as a sophomore at the University of Texas. And that they recommended that my parents withdraw me from the Livingston school, and they moved to Austin and enrolled me in the University of Texas. And they sent a rather senior official from the state board here to Livingston to talk to Dad and Mom. And at that time, the Jones family was a hierarchy composed of Dad and all of Dad's brothers and sisters, particularly his 3 maiden sisters that were commonly called the girls there, that operated a florist shop in Livingston. And the oldest one, the Aunt Cornelia, was born next child after Dad's birth. And she had gone on and graduated from Professor Winston's Moscow Male and Female Masonic Academy.
Wow.
And then had enrolled in Sam Houston Normal, and there was no communication from between Livingston or Leggett and directly to Huntsville. So Dad would saddle two riding horses and one pack horse, and he would take my aunt across country. There was a two-day trip from the farm at Leggett to Huntsville in September, and she would enroll for the year in Huntsville school. And then I don't think she even got to come home for Christmas. I think it was the end of the year in May or so before she got to come home, and Dad would take the horses, go get her, and bring her home again for the summer. Things were still primitive enough at that point in their life. The Dad, who had started carrying, he quit school by the time he was in the fourth or fifth grade and became a self-employed cattle trader and investor, and carrying the gold around in his pocket to buy a cow here and a cow there from the farmers meant that he usually had enough gold coins on him to get three men killed. And he started carrying a pistol openly strapped to his leg by the time he was 16 years old. And when he would take his sister on that trip across country there to Huntsville, they had to spend the first night at Onalaska, at what later became the sawmill town of Onalaska. And there was a ferry there operated by a family named Patrick, is known as Patrick's Ferry. And they maintained a house there that travelers could spend the night at. And there was just one problem with that. Mr. and Miss Patrick had the general community reputation of murdering people that spent the night there and putting their bodies in the Trinity River overnight so that they could steal their money. And when they got to Onalaska and they'd get a room, you know, came time to go to bed, Dad would, his sister, she'd go to bed, and Dad would close the door there and then put a chair against the door, and then he would sit there all night with a cocked pistol. And then coming back, we had to go through the same thing there. But she'd have all of her clothes and everything on that pack horse. And she lived over there during the year and graduated with a degree from Sam Houston Normal and went to teach in school in these country schools. Her sister, Aunt Claudine, also taught some. She didn't have a college degree. I don't know really what her education was, but it didn't get as far as graduating from college. The youngest sister, Effie, started a normal school for girls in Denton, which later became North Texas State University. At one time it was an all-women school called TSCW, something like that. And the first semester that she went to school there, in the middle of the semester, her father had a stroke. And they had already moved from the farm at Leggett to Livingston and bought a house there on what's now South Washington, right at the intersection of Garner, later Garner Street, and South Washington, a big old house. They moved in that, and the girls lived there with them for several years before they bought their own house down into later where the street was developed into Garner Street. And the property there stayed in the South Washington stayed in the family until about 15 years ago, 10 or 15 years ago. And we own it now. That's another story. Anyway, the family developed into a bunch of school teachers. Their dad's next oldest brother, Richard, went on, and I don't think he ever went to Professor Winston's school. I think he went directly to Huntsville, to the college, and graduated and married and came back and taught school here in Polk County for several years, and then got elected as the first county school superintendent. Then he went back and went to the University of Texas Law School and got a law degree and admitted to the bar and practiced law here in Livingston the rest of his life. Unfortunately, he developed a very advanced cancer and died by the time he was 60 years old. Anyway, the family got into school teaching early. Dad, of course, like I say, never got it past the point of being able to read. Now, he could read as well as any of us could, and read the what later became the Houston Post when it was still published in Galveston. From the very early days, he'd read from the headlines on the first page to the last word on the last page every day before daylight, and he could do simple arithmetic, and that was the extent of his formal education. But he was very successful in business at an early age. Point that I'm trying to make here is that the family had a connection with education. The background of in Dad's father's family was that they were all well educated. You understand that he was born 20 years after the American Revolution. His family, there was no public schools. The children were tutored at home until it was time to enroll them directly in a university. We don't know where my grandfather got his college education. He got to the point where he could teach school himself. My cousin Judy Jones was the authority for a book on the life of her aunt Margaret, that was commonly called Margot Jones, who became quite world famous in more or less reviving the theater in the round in the United States, and discovering these young playwrights, three or four of whom became internationally famous.
Well, Ward, when your parents got this letter from the state board and wanted you to go to the University of Texas, how was that received by your family, by your aunts and uncles?
Well, starting with Dad and Mother's attitude on it, of course, we just left the Austin area there, and Dad had some business associations there that they felt comfortable about just moving back to Austin, doing this, putting me directly in the University of Texas. Now, that, to put it mildly, that made me very uncomfortable with the idea. They convened a Jones family meeting. The entire family there, aunts, uncles, and whatever, over at our aunt's house. There must have been 12 or 15 of them deciding on my fate. Well, I made it known pretty fast my feelings about it, and my Aunt Cornelia took up for me. She was the dominant personality in the family. After, when it came to be a family question of any kind, we'd have one of those family meetings, and everybody would get to express their opinion and come up with a decision. But after they all had their say, Aunt Cornelia announced what we were going to do. That was the way it was going to be, too. So Aunt Cornelia and I won the contest. I stayed in Livingston in the fifth grade and went on with my life. The school was very, very easy for me from the first grade on. Of course, I was developing all of this reading.
I mean, that helped you.
I'm sorry.
I said all of the work that you did on your own when you were in Leander, you know, set you up for this great education. That was your education.
That's right.
That most kids don't have that opportunity.
I blew past
what
they were teaching in the regular school classes, except for mathematics. And, of course, you don't get science real young. But I always had difficulty with mathematics from beginning to end. That's another story that we'll get to here in a few minutes. The question comes up, what did you do with your time if you didn't have to study? I worked helping Dad. From the time I was 5 years old, I started milking the family milk cows morning and night and tending to them. That was the fencing to do and the other things on tending to the commercial cattle operation. And then we got into building small rent houses. And he and I did the biggest part of the work ourselves on it. And that was what I did, was to help him until we started my sophomore year of high school. I got the idea of starting a dairy. And we, Dad and I, went and bought 13 Jersey milk cows. And we set us up a Class A Texas-approved dairy behind the house. And I ran that dairy by myself, hand-milking 13 Jerseys morning and night.
Oh, my goodness.
All of my sophomore year and my junior year in school. Instead of studying particularly, I'd just blow past, and I could make a whatever kind of grade they wanted to give me, usually some kind of low-ranking A, which suited me and my parents. They didn't know the difference. They're just fine, except that when it came down to my senior year in high school, at the beginning of the year, they called me into the office and told me that I was within shooting range of being graduated as salutatorian of the class. For the first time in my public school education, I actually studied my senior year. But there were two girls in the class, Ruth Peoples and Joyce Ann Watts, had studied all 4 years in high school. Ruth was graduated as valedictorian and Joyce Ann as salutatorian. I was number 3 in my class. They're the highest ranking boy. But
how many were in your class?
61.
61?
Best I can count. I still got a picture of the senior class, and there's a certain amount of this of standing behind each other in the picture.
Right.
61 or 62.
Wow, that's a big class.
That's right. A big class. That's larger than my class of 1960.
That's about how many we had in 60.
Well, that was what it was.
Yeah.
Tell us about some of your activities in high school. Not home activities, but things that you did in school.
In those days, you were not exceptionally, and the girls didn't love you unless you played sports there. So wanting to fall into the category of being loved and finding out very early there that I couldn't even hit the backboard with a basketball. Well, this is during World War II days, you understand. Uh-huh. And the only two sports that Livingston High School participated in was football and basketball. And I was hopeless at basketball, so that left football. Now, physically, by the time I was in the 6th or 7th grade, I was as tall as I am today, except that I didn't weigh anything. As a freshman, I started playing football at 125 pounds.
Goodness.
And I wasn't fast enough to be a defensive back or an end, and they put me at playing tackle opposite these 250 and 300 pound tackles. And they came close to killing me is the only way to describe it.
But you were well loved.
Oh, well, not all that well loved anyway. But the other activities, I was strong in the drama department. I was in every play and musical that Livingston put on, and usually leading roles, not the handsome hero roles. Never was good enough looking to do that. I was very active in that. I don't really remember. I was in the glee club and I was in the band. I played trumpet in the band. I sang for a year or two in the glee club, and that was about it on extracurricular activities. Like I say, I was working, you understand. When you're running a dairy there, you don't have time for extracurricular activities.
But it sounds like you still participated well in your class activities. I mean, you were a busy boy.
Yeah, I had all I could handle.
I think so.
And Like I say, until I got into that challenge, nobody ever challenged me, whatever, going through until that senior year. And that was too late to make up high grades that Ruth and Joyce Ann had been accumulating through the first 3 years.
Back when you were in school, in high school, could y'all go home for lunch? Is that what you did? Did you have a cafeteria? Or did you have to bring your lunch, or could you go home for lunch? What?
I never ate in a school cafeteria. Either I took lunch or we went home for lunch. Mm. If Dad was where he could, he would pick my sister and I up and we'd go home to eat. Mother was a pioneer home demonstration agent before she and Dad married, and was an outstanding cook, just on what we'd call common cooking. We grew everything that we ate. I mean, the only thing we bought was coffee and sugar and salt and pepper and a few things like that. Our monthly grocery bill was never exceeded $15.
Wow.
The rest of it, we grew. We had our own beef cattle and our own milk cows. We raised a bunch of chickens, guineas. We had a whole bunch of wild mallard ducks for 2 or 3 years. Then Dad and I made 2 gardens a year there behind the house, 60 by 100 feet. And what we didn't eat, Mom preserved
right. And
put away to eat in the winter months. We ate as well as anyone in Livingston did. We just didn't have any cash.
I think, I'm assuming that when you graduated from high school, you were allowed to go to college.
There never was a question as to whether I was going to college or not.
Right.
Dad and Mom were determined after Mary Hazel and I were born that we were going to graduate from college. When I graduated from high school, of course, I had all this experience with Austin and the UT system from Mary Hazel and I playing around the campus and all of that. And there never was any doubt in my mind that I wanted to go to college anywhere except the University of Texas. The University of Texas was the one in Austin. All these other schools that are now the University of Texas at Huntsville and San Marcos and stuff, all of that, that was unheard of. Those were state teacher colleges, and they taught at a level to where if you graduated from them, you could teach in a small country school.
Correct.
Anyway, I went over to Austin impressed, you know, with how smart I was. The average enrollment at UT before the fall of 1947, which was when I started, had been around between 6,000 and 7,000 students. Mm-hmm. World War II was now over, and there was such a thing as a veterans college program, and the enrollment in that UT in the fall of 47 was 17,000. And you couldn't find a bed. The only way I managed to get a bed was the oldest Ogletree girl owned 12 boarding houses in the UT area. We went to Ben Ogletree here locally and said, will you please contact your sister and get her to find a place to let me live over there. And I got a bed in a 4-person bedroom. There they had 4 of us in each bedroom.
Good
in the
heavens.
House. And I lived in Anna Mae McAllum's house and ate in her cafeteria that she ran for the connection with it there all of my freshman year. And then there was an elderly Canadian man and his wife named Kitley that ran a boarding house for boys right at the intersection of Congress Avenue and 19th Street in Austin. And she reportedly served better meals than Anna Mae did. So I moved there and lived until I went off to the Air Force after I was almost graduated from the undergraduate school at UT. When the Korean War started, you understand, things got into a desperate situation very fast. We had this treaty obligation to defend South Korea. And when they were invaded on June 24, 1950 by the North Koreans there. They could have maybe successfully fought a war against the Livingston Boy Scout Troop. Incidentally, I was very active in the scouting program as I was growing up there. I'm an Eagle Scout. I was very active in scouting. Also, when I was in high school there, when I was 16, the state of Texas had a Texas State Guard organization where they had a company, the battalion and division organized mostly old World War I veterinarians. But I joined that Texas State Guard when I was 16 years old, and I was at Livingston, had a heavy weapons company, and I was an assistant machine gunner for almost a year. After a year, the war was over sufficiently, and they dissolved the Texas State Guard unit. But I was a private in the organized military unit when I was 16 years old, which played out later very successfully when I volunteered for the Air Force. That put me with the prior military training. You see, I always knew how to close order drill, and I was pilot man on our basic training company when we drilled, squad leader organization-wise. Anyway, after I got over to UT, things went very well in everything except algebra. I'd had 2 years of algebra in high school under Mr. B.C. Adams, who was a retired teacher, and he'd been recalled because all of the regular teachers had been drafted. We were operating on a bunch of recallees as teachers. And we thought it was smart to get Mr. Adams to talk about life experiences and stuff in class instead of teach the lesson. And we never got past the middle of the book, either one of those years that I took algebra in high school. When I got over there at UT, I signed up my freshman year with a course in UT algebra. And at the end of the first 6 weeks, I had an A average in it. And after that, I didn't have any idea what they were talking about. Even on the final in that course, with a 12-point curve, I made a 26. So I didn't know what to do. I'd just been totally lost. So I went and consulted some of the older math majors, and they said, you need to take it over again under Cosine Red. And I said, now, who in the world is Cosine Red? And here is the story. Mr. Red was somewhere in his 60s and had spent his entire teaching career teaching at UT mathematics. As the first year that he taught there, he failed half of the kids in his math classes. An old Dr. Benedict, who had been president of the universities ever since the Civil War, called him in to his office and royally chewed him out from A to Z, and ended up by informing him if he was such a poor teacher that he felt it necessary to fail 50% of his students, that they didn't need him at the University of Texas and find himself another job. And Mr. Red took the eating out and didn't say anything and left. And as he got out of the office there, he swore to himself, well, if that's what they want, I'll never fail another one. And reportedly, in all of those years, never had failed anyone.
Okay, Ward, you've had a really interesting education career. Most of it, I think, you know, came from yourself inside. I mean, God gave you a great brain, and you have just filled it up. I am amazed at your memory for your things that have happened to you, I think, are so much better than mine. I'm feeling guilt, sort of sad over here that I've forgotten so much. But we need to wrap this up today. We've taken quite a bit of recording here, and it's been great. And I know that so many people are going to enjoy it when they go on our website to hear about education here and your education.